This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Deuteronomy. Let's join Pastor Sandy in the book of Deuteronomy as he teaches chapters 22 through 26.
A New Yorker was passing through a South Georgia town on his way to Florida. He was driving down this country road when his car got stuck in a mud hole. The man dropped his car into low gear. He tried to wiggle it out of the hole. His tires started spinning and all, trying to get out of the mud. But of course, the harder he tried, the more entrenched he became. Well, after a few minutes, he noticed a farmer riding down the road in an ox-drawn cart. And this farmer offered to pull the man out of the mud for $100. Well, the city slicker agreed. He hitched his car to the oxen, and within minutes, the car was free. Afterwards, the farmer commented, he says, "You know, that's the 10th person today I've pulled out of that mud." Well, the New Yorker, he said, "Wow, you're a kind person. You must be a generous guy. I mean, when do you have time to plow your fields? You must have to do it at night." And that's when the farmer answered, "Oh, no, not at night. That's when I water down the mud hole." Well, in Deuteronomy chapter 22, God addresses a host of various concerns. The chapter covers a mix of environmental issues, safety procedures, ceremonial laws, moral principles, domestic grievances, even criminal offenses. It's a smorgasbord, and we start off with a few verses on oxen. Verse 1. "You shall not see your brother's ox or his sheep going astray and hide yourself from them. You shall certainly bring them back to your brother." Now, sin can be categorized into two types: sins of commission and sins of omission. A sin of commission is to do what you shouldn't. A sin of omission is to not do what you should. And here Moses is warning about a sin of omission. When you see your neighbor's lost ox, don't just turn your head and refuse to get involved. Don't take the attitude, "Well, that's not my problem." Love refuses to sit on the sidelines. Love is willing to take risks. It's willing to reach out. It dares to get involved. When it sees a need, it tries to meet it. "And if your brother is not near you, or if you do not know him, then you shall bring it to your own house, and it shall remain with you until your brother seeks it. Then you shall restore it to him." Hey, find a wallet on the side of the road or an expensive watch. Don't just stick it in your pocket and sing, "Finders, keepers, losers, weepers." Oh, no. You should go out of your way to return that lost item to its rightful owner. "You shall do the same with his donkey, and so shall you do with his garment, with any lost thing of your brother's, which he has lost and you have found. You shall do likewise. You must not hide yourself." If you're the last one to leave tonight on a Sunday night and you see a beautiful, nice jacket lying in your seat, your size, just coincidence, that doesn't mean that God has blessed you with a new jacket. Take it to the lost and found. Hey, if we find a wallet in the sanctuary after the service, same thing. We look out for the owner. We show him love. We take all of the cash that's in the wallet. We put it in the offering box. Because we know this is what the owner of the wallet would want us to do. I mean, who comes to church with a bunch of cash unless they want to give an offering? And then we drop the money in the offering box and we then wait and give the wallet back to the rightful owner. You just want to show love toward your brother. "You shall not see your brother's donkey or his ox fall down along the road and hide yourself from them. You shall surely help him lift them up again." His donkey, his ox, or his automobile broken down on the side of the road. You don't dip down, you know, or under the steering wheel where you can't be recognized. If you see your neighbor's car broken down on the roadside, stop and help. Or if you see he's been in an accident, stop and help. By the way, what do you call it when two oxen crash into each other? That's an oxidant. Not just an accident, it's an oxidant. Verse 5 changes the subject. Aren't you glad? It addresses a very serious subject. A woman shall not wear anything that pertains to a man, nor shall a man put on a woman's garment, for all who do so are an abomination to the Lord your God. In antiquity, the general dress for men and women was similar. Long robes and these wrapping garments. But there were subtleties that provided clear distinction between the sexes. Moses and his wife both wore a long robe, but you could tell the difference between her robe and his robe, certainly. Likewise, my wife and I both wear jeans, but there's no confusion between my jeans and her jeans, or my slacks and her slacks. When God created humanity, He created us male and female. Remember, gender was God's idea. He created the sexes equal but different, and quite frankly, I'm glad. They play diverse roles in family life, and this is why God doesn't want anything to blur the distinctions between male and female. And here the concern is dress. Androgynous or unisex fashion is here forbidden. Obviously, fashion is always changing, but whether you're living in 1400 BC or in 2000 AD, men should look like men and women should look like women. My family will let you know in a hurry how strongly I feel about this issue. I don't let my boys walk out with these jeans. It might be fashionable, but it's just not going to happen. They're going to look like boys. My daughter's going to look like a girl. My sons are going to look like a boy. You know, today's modern culture laughs and jokes about these issues. But that's not God's perspective. The Bible teaches that cross-dressing and masquerading as the opposite sex is not a fun, harmless, innocent fascination. It's a distortion of sexual identities, and it's forbidden. God created us male and female, and we should never blur those boundaries. Even if done jokingly, I still think cross-dressing is an unhealthy practice. At home and in society, we should do all that we can to promote masculinity among men and femininity among women. I agree with the lady who made the comment, "Oh, for the day when men were men and women were proud of it." Verse 6, if a bird's nest happens to be before you along the way, in any tree or on the ground with young ones or eggs, with the mother sitting on the young or on the eggs, you shall not take the mother with the young. You shall surely let the mother go and take the young for yourself, that it may be well with you and that you may prolong your days. Now here's one of the Bible's be kind to animals verses. There are some in the Bible. And notice the correlation here. Kindness to animals prolongs occupation in the land. I think that's interesting. He says that your days may be prolonged. If Israel is friendly to its environment, God will keep it as its custodian. That makes sense. The greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. But there are some Jewish commentators that consider verses 6 and 7 to be the smallest or the least of the commandments. Be kind to a bird. Greatest commandment, love God. Smallest commandment, be kind to a bird. And here's the point of the Jewish commentators. Evidently, God is so loving and He's so gracious and He's so benevolent that even the least of His commandments carries such a significant blessing that you may prolong your days in the land. Speaking of kindness to animals, did you hear about the man who strolled into this ritzy restaurant with his dog? The maitre d' tells him, he says, "I'm sorry, sir, but we don't let dogs eat here. No dogs allowed." And the guy says, "But you got to understand, my dog is a talking dog. This is a special dog. Tell you what I'll do. I'll ask my dog three questions, and if he gets all three questions right, how about just letting us not only eat here, but why don't you just pay for dinner? Maitre d' says, no problem. So the man turns, he asks his dog, he says, Spot, what's the opposite of smooth? Spot goes, rough. Oh, wow. Spot, what's on top of the house? Roof. He turns to the maitre d'. Wow, 2 out of 2. I hope you're impressed. Now for the grand finale. He turns to his dog and he says, Spot, who's the greatest home run hitter of all time? Babe Roof. The maitre d', you know, enough is enough. How ridiculous. He grabs the man and his dog by the collar. He throws them both outside the restaurant, and there they are laying on the side of the street when suddenly the dog turns over to his owner and he says, well, I guess on that last question I should have said Hank Aaron. I think that's hilarious. The moral of the story, be kind to animals. Verse 8, when you build a new house, then you shall make a parapet or a railing for your roof, that you may not bring guilt of bloodshed on your household if anyone falls from it. And of course, you know, they spent a lot of time on the rooftops. It was a place to hang out and fellowship. Once when we were down in Haiti, we held an evangelistic rally in front of this hospital. And dozens of people gave their life to Jesus when we gave the altar call. It was incredible. And we wanted to talk to them further, but we wanted to kind of separate them from the crowd. So we told those who had responded to go to a room that was on the second floor of the building. That meant that they had to walk up some steps. And of course, there was no railing. There are no railings anywhere in Haiti. The owner of the building, as soon as I suggested it, he panicked. Because since those steps had no railing, he feared that someone would fall off of the steps, get hurt, perhaps even die. And what would happen, the locals would then conclude that his building was cursed. And they would never again come back onto his property. You see, a railing had spiritual significance to him. I think this verse highlights the responsibility of a man who starts a family, who builds himself a house. I think it speaks to a father. It speaks to a husband. Dad, it's your responsibility to set standards, to provide boundaries, to set up safeguards for your wife and kids. It's your responsibility to provide spiritual railings for your household, lest they fall and hurt themselves. He says, you shall not sow your vineyard with different kinds of seed, lest the yield of the seed which you have sown and the fruit of your vineyard be defiled. You shall not plow with an ox and a donkey together. An ox and a donkey were different species. They had different instincts. Thus, put the two of them in the same harness and they'll end up fighting with each other. And the same applies to a believer and an unbeliever. When harnessed together in a marriage or when yoked together in a business partnership, diverse priorities will arise. There's two species, there's two natures, and they'll end up in constant conflict. It's misery. This is why Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 14, to not be unequally yoked with an unbeliever. I think verses 9 through 11 were all given to sensitize God's people to the dangers of mixing competing characteristics, whether it be an ox and a donkey, whether it be wool and linen. He says in verse 11, you shall not wear a garment of different sorts, such as wool and linen mixed together. You see, partner with an unbeliever is like, at first, it's like putting on linen. It's cool. No problem. No sweat. But then you turn up the heat and suddenly it gets hot. It's like wool. It does become a sweat. It does involve perspiration and agony. It turns into an ordeal. Wool and linen should never be mixed. He says, you shall make tassels on the four corners of the clothing with which you cover yourself. And you remember Numbers. It was chapter 15, verse 38, said these tassels were a reminder to the Jews of God's law. To this day, they wear tassels on the borders of their garments. Verse 13, if any man takes a wife and goes into her and detests her and charges her with shameful conduct and brings a bad name on her and says, I took this woman, and when I came to her, I found she was not a virgin. Now, often people will want us, I'm sure you've had this question asked of you, people will want us to show them where the Bible specifically forbids premarital sex. And here is a great example. For among God's people, within His divinely designed society, Israel, when two people married, there was an expectation of virginity between them. Virginity was highly valued, and without it, a woman's chances for marriage were greatly reduced. Well, these next few verses deal with a situation where a man accuses his wife of false advertising, basically, of saying that she's a virgin when in reality she's not. He says, then the father and the mother of the young woman shall take and bring out the evidence of the young woman's virginity to the elders of the city at the gate. What was this evidence? Well, on their wedding night, it was customary for the newlyweds to lay a cloth under them so that it collected the few drops of blood that were created by the woman's initial intercourse. This was then given to the parents as proof of the woman's virginity. Now today, gynecological exams and the fact that women marry at much later ages make this an impractical test. But in ancient times, the new brides could be 13, 14, sometimes even younger. And so this proved to be a reliable test of a woman's virginity. It's interesting, there are places in the Middle East, even to this day, where this custom is still observed. Now, if she's accused, the bride's parents bring out this evidence of virginity, the cloth. And the young woman's father shall say to the elders, I gave my daughter to this man as wife, and he detests her. Now he has charged her with shameful conduct, saying, I found your daughter was not a virgin, and yet these are the evidences of my daughter's virginity. And they shall spread the cloth before the elders of the city. Then the elders of that city shall take that man and punish him. In other words, the man had lied in an attempt to gain a divorce from his wife. And they shall fine him 100 shekels of silver, and they'll give them to the father of the young woman because he has brought a bad name on a virgin of Israel. You see how God valued virginity? He says, and she shall be his wife. He cannot divorce her all his days. Verse 20. But if the thing is true, and evidences of virginity are not found for the young woman, then they shall bring out the young woman to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her to death with stones because she has done a disgraceful thing in Israel to play the harlot in her father's house, so you shall put away the evil from among you. And you say, God takes premarital sex lightly? That's not what these verses tell me. Now, if a man is found lying with a woman married to a husband, then both of them shall die. The man that lay with the woman and the woman, so you shall put away the evil from Israel. Two people caught in the act of adultery both deserved the death penalty. And this is why the episode in John chapter 8 is so suspicious. You remember the woman taken in adultery that they threw at Jesus' feet? She was taken in the very act. Well, if so, where was her partner? Last I checked, it takes two to commit adultery. According to the law, both the man and the woman was stoned, but on that day, they only delivered the woman. It's likely that she was the victim of a Pharisaical setup. Verse 23 tells us, if a young woman who is a virgin is betrothed to a husband, and a man finds her in the city and lies with her, then you shall bring them both out to the gate of that city, and you shall stone them to death with stones. The young woman, because she did not cry out in the city, and the man, because he humbled his neighbor's wife, so you shall put away the evil from among you. Now, the fact that the woman didn't cry out implies that the sex was consensual. It was not a rape. But if a man finds a betrothed young woman in the countryside, and the man forces her and lies with her, then only the man who lay with her shall die. But you shall do nothing to the young woman. There is in the young woman no sin deserving of death. For just as when a man rises against his neighbor and kills him, even so is this matter. For he found her in the countryside, and the betrothed young woman cried out, but there was no one to save her. In this case, it's rape. And rape is not the woman's fault. She should be comforted, not condemned. And thus God punishes the man, but then brings comfort to the woman. Now, if a man finds a young woman who is a virgin, who is not betrothed, and he seizes her and lies with her, and they are found out, and again, the implication here is that it's consensual, then the man who lay with her shall give to the young woman's father 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife because he has humbled her. He shall not be permitted to divorce her all his days. Now, here's the case of two people who have premarital sex. They are to marry. But notice this. When does the woman become the man's wife? When they have sex? No, not at all. They become husband and wife when the man pays her father the bridal price. This was the procedure by which people in ancient times entered marriage. Don't tell me that just because you live with this person and that you've had sex with her, then you're married in God's eyes. I've heard that a million times. The Bible is clear. In God's eyes, you're not married. In fact, God doesn't recognize two people as being married until the bridal price is paid. Or, in essence, the legalities are completed. And whatever those legalities happen to be, based on that culture at that time, are what constitutes a marriage in God's eyes. In that day, it was the payment of a bridal price. In our day, it means standing before an official and exchanging vows, a ceremony. Understand that? Good. Clear to me. I don't know why I didn't to a lot of other people that I talked to. Verse 30 forbids incest. A man shall not take his father's wife, nor uncover his father's bed. You shall not have sex with your stepmother. Which was a sin, by the way, going on in the church at Corinth. You remember Paul addressed it in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 1 and 2. You see, not only did Israel need these laws, but they also provide a moral compass for the church today. Chapter 23 tells us, "Now he who is emasculated by crushing or mutilation shall not enter the congregation of the Lord." Now remember that the covenant God made with Israel was with Abraham and his seed. Remember that? It was a covenant inherited by birth, thus a eunuch. Someone who had been emasculated, someone who had been crushed or mutilated, could never be a full participant in the life of the nation because he could never give birth. He could never pass on that lineage. He was limited. One of the illegitimate birth shall not enter the congregation of the Lord. Even to the 10th generation, none of his descendants shall enter the congregation of the Lord. 10 generations of blood had to flow to make him a legitimate heir.
Listening to Bible teaching here on the radio is a huge blessing that many of our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world simply don't have. We rejoice in this opportunity to share Pastor Sandy's messages with you. We do want to be sure to remind you that radio is not a church. Radio should be a complement to what God is already doing in your personal discipleship through the local body of believers that you're a part of. Maybe you're listening today. You don't have a home church. You've visited various places, but nothing seems to fit. First, if you live in the Atlanta, Georgia area, we want to personally invite you to join us for worship at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. We meet every Sunday morning at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. For more information, including driving directions, please log on to sandyadams.org and follow the link to the church website. Now, if you're listening outside of the Atlanta, Georgia area and are looking for a home church, we encourage you to log on to calvarychapel.com and find a Calvary Chapel in your area that teaches through the Bible just like Pastor Sandy does each day here on this program. Well, we wish we had more time today, but we've come to the close of today's broadcast. Be sure to remember to join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through God's Word. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.